If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Got the heat. You've been listening to Roll Away from Turquoise's EP Afterlife Volume 1, a series of tracks that didn't quite make it onto their last full-length album, Life in the City. The first volume was released back in May, but the second installment, Afterlife Volume 2, was just recently released, and it features tracks that continue to see the band evolve and experiment. Better Get Ready, as an example, stretches the boundaries of funk into what can only be described as a rock sound. We're impressed that they are bold enough to take chances and try new things. That's brave. So we caught up with Dave, Blue, Brandwine to talk about the second volume of Afterlife and to see what the band has going on and what their plans are for the future. Our conversation started when I suggested to Dave that this final Afterlife EP, the second, puts a nice two-year bow on all the band has been working on.
Yeah, honestly, it's more like three at this point, now that it's up on a year since the album's been out. So it does put a nice bow on it, and that was important to me. I didn't really want to take things from, you know, that were left over from the last album that didn't get used onto the next one. I kind of want to start fresh next time. So these follow-up EPs were a perfect way to do that, kind of, you know, using every part of the buffalo, so to speak, and just really getting at all the mileage out of the things we put down, because there was a lot of it, and it was all fairly worthwhile, as I hope people find as they listen to these two EPs.
What's amazing about these two EPs and the last one in particular is you're spreading your wings a bit more and the sound continues to evolve. When you leave stuff off an album, typically it's because they don't fit thematically, they don't fit musically, or there's just so much material. And Life in the City was such an amazing record that, you know, I can understand that you needed to trim, and I don't want to say every part of the buffalo, because that doesn't give songs like Mr. Man or Better Get Ready enough justice, but...
Right.
There's stuff that didn't fit thematically that maybe you wanted to get out from the band, and maybe this ushers in a new kind of sound for Turquoise. Is that fair?
Yeah, I don't know that necessarily the different directions that you hear us going on the EPs imply that we're going to go deeper in those directions. I think that what you're hearing, perhaps we will, and time will tell, but I think mostly the reason for it is that we were trying to spread our wings in being willing to try anything in the making of Life in the City. So what you're hearing is, you know, different ends, far ends of the spectrum of all the things we tried, because the album before, Digitonium, was so stylized and such a specific vibe that I think knowing how much we do in the live setting that differs from that and has a wider sort of array of styles we draw from, we wanted to try any and everything in creating the record. And I think the nine tracks that made it on were the sort of boiled down center point of it all, in a way, in an odd way. And what you're hearing are sort of the pieces on the end. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily not as good or not as fun, because I think there's things that are really fun and great about each track. It's just that, you know, it didn't work its way into what the nine songs statement ended up feeling like it should be, but I'm so glad that they're out now, and they do show different parts of what we can do as a band.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, you're a band that is evolving, whether it's work you're doing in the studio, whether it's the stuff that Shira's doing, or any of the other members of the band when they're not part of Turquoise necessarily. I mean, everybody is part of Turquoise, but, you know, all these side projects and stuff. Everybody, you know, this is a big band, and everybody sort of brings a little bit of flavoring that needs to be watered and needs to be looked at and thought about in terms of making a Turquoise record, right?
Absolutely. And I think each person is getting more comfortable bringing in ideas. More people in the band are starting to write who didn't in previous records, as I think we maybe discussed last time we talked. Yep. And So I'm also writing and working on a couple of other projects, and it's always interesting when I write something and I'm like, is this Turquoise or is this, you know, this other, this, you know, another thing that I'm doing. And it's, you know, why it's tough is because we have covered a lot of ground as Turquoise. So in some ways I feel we can kind of do anything. And we're also really lucky that our fans have, they've really gone on the ride with us. I don't really get too much feedback about people, you know, not loving different directions we go in. Like, they're, people are pretty open-minded in our fan base, it seems, which is really fun. And it allows us to explore that and let other influences in. And it's exciting, but it can be challenging at times knowing where the line is. But, you know, that's a better problem to have than feeling completely pigeonholed, you know? So
who is the gatekeeper or the brand manager for what's a Turquoise song and what is, yeah, this is not a it's fun and we dig it, but this is not a Turquoise song. Is it ultimately band leader and frontman Dave Brandwine who makes that call, or who makes that call?
Ultimately, I would have to say yes. I mean, there's been times where maybe somebody brings in something to me and I say exactly what you just said. This is really cool. It's really fun. I don't know if this is a Turquoise song. I do it to myself more often than to anybody else. So, you know, I think I like to think I have a fairly consistent filter on that. But that filter does open and close and change over time as we do, you know, now that we've done a release like this that has a really heavy rock tune on it. It's got kind of like, you know, a number of different, each song kind of has its own vibe on volume two. And, you know, I don't know, like you said, I think the only direction it can ensure that we're heading is, you know, being open-minded. And, you know, we definitely have a brand. In the early days, it was kind of bombastic, crazy funk, you know, and fast, loud, intense. And that was a signature for a while. And I don't want to lose that either. And if anything, I may be thinking more about gearing back towards some of that stuff in the near future, just to kind of get back to our roots a little bit. But ultimately, I'd say that, you know, there are no rules, and I enjoy different projects having different identities and doing, as you've noticed, there's themes for different records. And so that exploring themes gives us license to go a lot of different directions and different phases of our career over time, you know.
The fan base has probably evolved with you, and, you know, you play a lot of festivals, and at festivals, well, there's all kinds of things that people are listening to. You know, when you're playing the Workout or you're playing Telluride Jazz Festival, well, you know, as a funk band, you kind of are different amongst all the other different bands. And I wonder if that has also something to do with the fact that your sound may or may not be evolving because your fan base is evolving in terms of how they got to you or in terms of what they're listening to. Do you take that into consideration as well?
Definitely. And I think that we, you know, it's interesting. We play in the jam scene, of course, and a lot of festivals that we do are very much of that scene. But we do tend to have kind of a wider appeal than just people who listen to that type of music, pretty much across the board in terms of just demographics, all ages, you know, all types of people. And our booking agent has said that about to me. Like, it's kind of, he's like, it's kind of amazing. I can book you at like a brewery. I can book you at like a fair. I can book you at, you know, at a mainstream festival. I can book you at a jammier festival. Like, he doesn't feel too much limitation in terms of where he can put us and knowing that we are going to give the audience a really good time and they're going to walk away, you know, keeping in touch with us, following us and seeing us again. And so I think that's been the key to our slow and steady growth. And absolutely, the fact that we've appealed to a wide group of people has helped us feel free in exploring different directions and different sounds.
You've not conquered North America, but you certainly have left an indelible mark and continue to leave an indelible mark on North America. And now you're spreading your wings, so to speak. And you have two exciting occasions overseas, one in Tokyo at the Blue Note, and then you're heading down under to Australia for the Calundra Music Festival in October. Talk about kind of, I mean, that's got to be pretty cool that your sound is reaching those places. At least it's reached, if not to, you know, an audience, it's reaching bookers and agents and festival creators that, you know, you're able to spread your wings like that. I mean, that must be pretty satisfying.
Absolutely, yeah. Life in the City came out on a Japanese label, which we were excited about, and we were hoping that it would result in a you know, playing out there. And it's going to be absolutely unlike anything we've done before, and we are extremely excited. And similarly, yeah, Australia, I've never been there before, playing three performances at that festival there. And we really want to turn that into those places, into the types of markets that we go back to on the time, hopefully at least on an annual basis, something like that. Time will tell, obviously, but very, very excited to be opening up on the international stage more. I mean, obviously we love playing in the continental US, but you know, we've seen a lot of it. We've seen a lot of it. It's going to be nice, even just on a personal level, traveling to such a different place and getting to see some other culture. And then not only that, but interact with it in the form of playing our music. I mean, honestly, there's nothing better, you know. It's really amazing.
You're always writing, and you don't necessarily need to be in the lab that is Galaxy Smith Studios to put pieces together. I mean, the Afterlife collection was made in so many different places. I guess have MacBook, have tools, which you travel with anyway. You really can be anywhere to make music. Is that an ongoing process for you guys when you're touring, or when you know, you have a chance to go to Japan or Australia? I'm sure there's going to be inspiration in those cities. Is that something that you jot down ideas from and take back, or is that something that you want to get down as quickly as you can so you don't forget, in terms of having some time in sound check or having some time before a show or whatever? Or is it just, you know, we'll get it down and then we'll collaborate back in the lab?
It's kind of all of the above. I do writing when I definitely do write when I'm on the road. In fact, the way it will sometimes work is you prepare certain things that you need the studio for, and then you have them on the road. So we recorded a bunch of instrumentals recently, and then I just had, you know, the MP3s on my phone just for listening purposes. And one night in my bunk on the bus, I couldn't sleep till like 5:30 a.m. and I wrote like four songs. In, you know, it was just feeling, for some odd reason, it was kind of just coming out. So I just kept going until it stopped, or until I got too tired. And so I can do writing remotely, obviously. Yeah. And then when I can, actually, I even have a microphone and an interface with me with my laptop on the road. I can record demos of it on the road. And, but often we'll come back to the studio and flesh it out later. And, you know, I'll probably do a couple rewrites, things like that. But we've also recorded things that have gone on records on the road before. In fact, the guitar solo, the lead guitar in the track one of Afterlife One, Roll Away, we loaded into Seattle, and there was a huge snowstorm in Seattle that day. So the whole city was basically shut down. It was super quiet. We were there extremely early. I think we'd been there a day early. And on stage during our sound check, we recorded Craig's lead guitar for that song because our live console has the ability to record. It's high quality. We have high quality microphones. So actually that lead guitar that you hear was actually done like on stage at during our sound check time. So it's really a mixed bag. We do stuff on the road, we do stuff at home. And of course, when you're sequencing and using, creating a grooves with software, I mean, Craig is doing that constantly on the tour bus. And those are tracks that you end up later exporting and bringing into the session at the studio. So, yeah, it's with the amount of time that we spend on the road, I see it as fairly wasteful if we can't, be also generating material, because 8-9 hours a day, we're kind of sitting around waiting, you know?
Yeah. And it's easier now, right? I mean, it's not just taking out an acoustic guitar and writing. I mean, you can open up GarageBand, you can open up Logic, you can open up anything and sort of have fun. Go at it.
Absolutely. I mean, in some ways, I actually miss the old days where I would just take out an acoustic guitar and write. And I'm trying to do that more and more when I'm home. But yeah, no, technology has worked its way firmly into that process and almost, replaced what I used to do sitting at a piano or guitar. Now you have these tools, and I think it's probably good not to lose sight with, sitting with an instrument is a very like physical sort of primal experience of writing that is different than staring at a phone. And I think it's important to keep utilize both. But it's no question that it's extremely useful having this technology in our pockets now. I mean, I have GarageBand on my phone.
Right.
And if I need to make a demo in a pinch, if I have a groove idea, I'll pull out my phone and make it right away. So absolutely, it's extremely useful to have.
Bunker Sessions Volume 1 coming to a store and online retailer soon.
Exactly.
It is, I mean, you guys, you in specific, are so prolific in writing songs. Is Turquoise the only muse, or, you mentioned that there are other projects that we may or may not know about yet. You're working on other things? I mean, without...
I am. Yeah. I'm actually, today, what I'm in the studio working on is a bunch of songs that I've had probably, I mean, for minimum 5 years, the newest ones, some of them 10 years, some of them honestly probably 15 years.
Wow.
That I've been sitting on. I used to write a lot more, speaking of, we just touched on this, but sitting with an acoustic guitar and writing is something that I used to do constantly. And I would have to say at least 100 or so songs that I've just known for years, and I play them sometimes when I sit down on guitar. But this band, Turquoise, is been my focus for the last decade basically, which is fantastic. But I finally have the studio here now, so I've been working on some of this other music that has just been sitting around for forever, it seems like. And I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. I don't really know too much about it, other than I'm recording it. I actually have been for a while, and hoping to finish it up this fall and then start to look at what I might do. I don't know. I don't have too much time to go out on tour for another project, so it might be a little more of a studio thing. But we'll see. And then another project with another production partner of mine, who actually did co-produce and co-wrote with me the first and last track on Life in the City. My buddy Rob, who we've been producing some other artists together and writing together, and that's a more sort of electronic project, I would call it, that I'm doing with him as well. So I have two quote unquote side projects or solo projects in the works, but certainly nothing released just yet.
So Galaxy Smith Studios is getting a fine workout, whether it's Turquoise music or other clients that you have coming through. I mean, you're putting it to good
absolutely. Yeah, we do have I have another engineer here named Tim Walsh, who I've been working with a lot. He used to be in a really amazing band called the Step Kids, who are no longer playing, but I was a huge fan of his work, and he moved down to New York and moved into the studio here with me. And so he brings in his clients, works on his music, works with me. And yeah, it's pretty much every day we have something going on here at the studio.
It's busy, man. I don't know how you keep it together. You are on the road for, well, most of August into September, and then even into October with those dates in Japan and Australia and doing all the stuff. I mean, when do you have downtime? Can you just chill and hang out with your amazing photographer wife and just relax and just chill?
We're going to Seattle in a couple of weeks just to hang with some of her family there. And you know, that's what it takes, honestly, is getting away, not being on tour, but not being, because when I'm home, I can relax for maybe a couple hours at a time, but it's the tricky thing when there's no potential end to how much you could or should be doing.
Right.
I tend to always feel just something kind of burning in the back of my mind if I'm not down here working on something. So it's difficult when that's the only downside to having my studio here at home is, I mean, it's obviously extremely convenient, but it's tough to feel like you're done sometimes, you know, for the night. Even you go up and have some dinner, and then it's like, oh, well, I could probably just keep working on that other thing. It's not done yet. So I have a little bit to learn with not burning myself out. And I think getting away, getting out of town, not on tour, but just enjoying another city, another place, that's the best way I've found to be able to actually relax and have downtime. Doesn't happen too often, but, you know, once every 6 months or something like that.
Well, don't burn out, man. We enjoy all the music that you're creating and all the different things that you're doing.
I drink a lot of coffee.
Oh, good. Oh, good. So you're self-medicated. That's perfect.
That's my current drug of choice. My only one.
2020, a new record from Turquoise?
I'm going to go with yes.
Okay. Okay, cool.
I don't want to reveal too much, but there's a lot in the works right now.
Cool.
Pretty much all I can say, I suppose.
That's fair. I have to ask. Thanks so much for taking the time, dude. You're always around when we need to buzz you, and we can't thank you enough for being like that.
Time.
Good luck. I mean, I'm psyched for you guys to go to Japan. That should be that, you know, I think they'll get a kick out of all the different colors and everything. That should be fun.
Yeah, I believe they've listed us on their website by each band member by their color. So they're definitely excited about it, as are we.
All right, Blue. Well, have fun. Take care, and we'll talk real soon. Congratulations, man. It's all great stuff.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Brave, fearless, experimental, fun. I dig it. Turquoise continues to try out new things and continues to impress new audiences wherever and whenever they play. The studio stuff is just a blueprint for the live performances, which are always a ton of fun. With tour dates in the offing and new music perhaps in the new year, lots of nice things are happening for Turquoise, and we're psyched. To find out more, visit turquoiseband.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to a new track, one off of Afterlife Volume 2. Here is Mr. Man.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.